Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. In this special episode of Honestly, I'm joined by two incredible guests who have been able to turn their lives around with the help of Centrepoint. Brooke Morgan and Kai both found themselves becoming Centrepoint residents after life at home became too difficult. Whilst there, the centre gave them a place to stay, mental support, and the building blocks to help plan for their future. And testament to that is the fact that Kai is now a successful comedian, whilst Brooke Morgan is an assistant director. I was so amazed by their strength and resilience, and I hope you are too. So let's start with a quick fire round to get us in the mood. Bear in mind that this podcast is called Honestly. So okay. That is the name of the game. But I don't think either of you would be anything but. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how fun are you?
10.
I'm a strong 5 on an average day.
Yeah, if I've eaten and had enough sleep.
Yeah, I'd I'm quite neutral. But then on a night out, which is very rare, probably a 16.
From 5 to a 16.
I'm modest as well.
And you went straight 10.
Don't.
Liddy in the city.
I'm living my best life at 16 over here.
Right?
It depends. I've got a spectrum of different moods. Do you know what I mean? I think, yeah, if I'm hungry, it's minus figures.
There's zero fun to be had.
That's spiritual. Yeah, that anger.
Yeah.
Never, ever get hungry. On a scale of 1 to 10, how popular are you?
1,600 followers, not that popular.
I'd say 8, I think. Yeah, I'm quite low. I've got close.
She's giving him a look that you can't see, but you are.
I'd say out of 10. Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Don't make him question himself.
No, I'm like, go. I'm rooting for you over here.
Give us your number then.
Yeah, I'm popular to the people that matter.
Exactly.
On a 10.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. On a scale of 1 to 10, how rebellious are you?
I say 12. So rebellious, I don't even stick to the 10, the 10 point rule. That's how rebellious I am.
I'm a 4.
Okay.
So not at all.
Not really.
Anti-rebel.
Depends what it is, man. Because I can get up to a strong 16 again. Right. But I mean, it's just...
Be okay.
Yeah. I need to be careful I don't become the angry black woman as well.
Honestly, because people look at you like you have to be on your best behaviour all the time.
Yeah.
Especially like in the arts and stuff, yeah. People know my background and they're like, you came from Centrepoint. Oh, you're the only FMO. No. See, like, if you ever do anything, they're like, so it's unconscious bias. Like, yeah. I knew he was like that. I think people think I'm way more rebellious than I am.
Yeah.
But in my head, I'm like, lovely little man.
Very, very sensible and safe.
I know.
Favourite colour?
Wolf grey? Is that a bit granny?
I've never heard the term wolf grey. That's a good...
colour of my living room.
Wolf grey?
Mm.
Okay. I was going to say red. I feel like I'm a basic bitch.
Red's fine.
Okay, well, yeah. I'd say like a maroon.
Ooh.
Is that dark red?
Okay.
My vocabulary is not very, yeah.
So, yeah.
Like a dark, yeah, like... Yeah.
This room is not far off that, so if you just looked around and gone, I'll choose that.
Podcast, but the wall on that side.
That's like asking your child, will you go, what's your favourite colour? That one.
That one.
Yeah. Most prized possession.
I honestly don't have anything, like any sort of... I kind of live out of a bag at the moment. I don't have anything that's proper, like...
Do you have any equipment that you...
My phone. That's about it. Yeah. Honestly, that's the only thing I'd ever be distraught if I lost that. Which is I'm just like such a millennial thing to say.
No, I mean, we all know that panic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really detest public transport, so my car...
How would you describe your relationship with money?
Oh my God, I had this conversation recently. I think I've got a deep relationship with money. I think it's got a big meaning in my life. Like, I'm doing a show and I'm writing this about money.
Mm.
I was like, when I was younger, every problem used to be about money. When I was really, really young, I've got like a trip from like a letter from school about a residential trip I knew my mum couldn't afford. I'd hide that. Like I'd always be, and like now my anxiety is based purely on money. It's bad. But like if I'm ever in my overdraft, which I usually am, like my overdraft, my whole state and how I treat people is so different, which is so bad. But I feel like as a kid, that's like what I grew up with. It's funny, I was having this exact conversation.
Yeah, I think your childhood completely shapes your relationship with money.
100%.
My mum's always been a good saver.
Has she? Really? Are you a good saver?
No. Do you know what? When I have money, like, I've just got a new job, so now I'll be able to, like...
Yeah, you can't save, you haven't got
Throw away. But, like when I was little, my mum took us to Orlando and, like, Canada on benefits. And she never...
That's mad.
Yeah, really? And I'm like...
Massive respect.
I've just recently come off Universal Credit. Don't know why you took two kids, love. Like,
she's got that side hustle.
Right. I liked her. But yeah, literally, she used to buy and sell costume jewellery and stuff like that. So she's always has a side thing going. But like when she was studying, I vividly remember going on holidays, and like it's only like in my later years now, she was like, do you know I was on benefits? Like she said to me the other day, do you know I was on benefits sending you to piano lessons? £10 an hour. Like, what? Can't play piano now.
I was going to say,
what a waste. Yeah. But do you know, I think money's a mindset, is like what you were saying as well. Yeah. Like,
but next time there's a piano on the tube station, you're like, hey. Yeah.
No.
I'm like, if I'm rich, I'll be happy. And I know everyone's like, that's not true. I'm just like, oh, you know what? I need to get rich enough to realise it won't make me happy. But even now I'm like,
no, but
probably will.
There's a great book written by a friend of mine called Alex Holder called Open Up About Money. And she talked to people across a massive spectrum of financial situations. And there is definitely a point where not having to worry about money. Yeah. So it's not actually about being a multimillionaire. It's about getting to a point where you're comfortable.
Yeah.
It's like, of course that affects your 100%. Your happiness. Do you believe in marriage?
Yeah.
No, not anymore. As in, not anymore, as in now. Not like I've changed my view on it, but probably, no, I don't.
No.
I mean, as in, I don't think I'll get married.
No, why?
You can still be with someone for a long time, not be married, I don't know.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a wedding.
That's like the party.
That's not worth getting married for.
No, you can have it. Okay.
Do registry office at a nice event after.
Good party, yeah.
Yeah. With no like sit down food. Cheap, cost effective.
Yeah. I do a Wetherspoons one, they do a real cheap deal.
Get a bargain. What star sign are you?
Cancerian, but I'm on the cusp of a Leo. So
yeah, you'll definitely got more Leo traits.
I'm a bit of an emotional bitch with a bite.
I'm a Taurus. But I don't know what that means. What's like the personality traits of that?
What is that?
Quite reliable.
Really? Oh, that's definitely not. That is.
No, pick another one.
I don't know enough about Tauruses, but I'm going to look.
We'll Google it.
I think stubborn. Stubborn.
Yeah.
What are you?
I'm a Pisces, which is a nightmare. It just means I'm really emotional.
Oh, we'll get along.
It's a terrible thing. What do you want to be remembered for?
Being a catalyst for change.
Oh, yes.
I think for me, I just want to create like a body of work, like, you know, TV show, like stuff like that. So like a book, a TV show and a book. That's like, that I'm really proud of. That at least like something tangible that I can get.
I reckon though you can go bigger than that, because I think you might well achieve those in the not too distant future.
Yeah, but I, one step at a time.
It's going to happen. Yeah. Three words your inner critic or imagined worst enemy would use to describe you. Such excellent faces.
You go first.
My worst enemy. They're irrelevant anyway, so I can't even think of what they would say. Lord.
That is.
My inner critic. What would I tell myself? Don't be dumb is a phrase that I use.
There you go.
But that really gets me into shape, so I don't know how much. Don't be dumb. Like, don't. Britt Morgan, get up. Don't be dumb. Big recipe.
I think I feel like people are like, who does this guy think he is?
Really? That. Imposter syndrome.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that. I think other people think that. I think my self-esteem has probably got a bit bigger recently as it was when I was younger. Mm. So I think I'm all right. I think I'm pretty good. I never got that from like where I was from ever, like growing up. Never, ever got that. But I think now it's like, I think when you appear confident, it's like everyone kind of knows my background. Everyone kind of knows stuff like that. And if you're like the only non-white person in the room and it's sort of like, kids who literally went to Eton and stuff, and you're like, you know, doing all right, then it's like it's almost highlighting them that they probably had a better education and came for more money, and you'll do a bit better. And it's like that thing.
Well, yeah, people think that it's always shining a light on them, isn't it?
Yeah, I like to think that was easier said than
And also, in all industries, so many everyone's blagging, everyone's fronting.
That's the thing.
Yeah, everywhere, at every point, at everything you ever do.
Mm.
You know, you get to the next senior bit and you're like, oh, right, yeah.
Don't actually know.
Yeah, they don't know, and everyone's just guessing. So that was the quick fire bit, not so quick fire, but now we're going to get on to the big topic of homelessness. So straight in, tell us about your childhood. Where did you grow up? What was it like?
I grew up in Southwest London, Clapham. Growing up was great. I had a great life. Like I was saying before, I'm quite well travelled. My mum is a poet and a fashion designer.
Is she?
So really creative, really cool. I grew up in church, so that was quite cool. Singing and whatever. But yeah, life was great until it wasn't, really.
We'll get on to the until it wasn't in a second.
So when I was growing up, I was born in Birmingham, in Handsworth, and then moved to Coventry. Me, my mum, brother and my dad. Then me and my mum and brother left my dad because they had like an arranged marriage. So they couldn't really get a divorce, so he like ran off. So obviously my mum was working like in a corner shop at the time, trying to support two kids.
How little were you really?
I was like seven.
So the bit that we're kind of dancing round is the bit that led you to being at Centrepoint. So what was the tipping point for both of you?
I had a bereavement in my family and it hit my mum really hard because it was her brother. She's 1 in 5 and she was kind of, she's the only girl as well, which meant she was kind of like the mummy. And that just took the
was
wind.
Was he young when he...
Well, yeah, 33, relatively, yeah, passed away.
He's really young.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
He's a 37-year-old in the room.
Yeah, very young. And literally, he went into hospital, maybe on like a Sunday, maybe by Wednesday, he was gone. From something simple, dehydration. You would thought we were in a developing country, and it's like, no, he just needed a bit of water and maybe a bit of salt, you know? So that was literally crazy. Like, our best friend relationship, literally flatlined. Yeah.
And how old were you at this time?
Maybe 14. So, you know, like, that crucial age where
it's a really complicated
I need
time.
To talk to you about, like, certain stuff and, like...
Yeah, you're changing a lot. And
I'm changing a lot and I don't really understand. And you're cool, so I want to be like you.
And she's grieving.
Now you've flatlined.
Yeah.
So it was like she lost her brother and I lost my best friend because like literally her behaviour was like she stopped eating, stopped working, stopped talking. Right. It was horrible. And then obviously you're not educated about mental health. So everyone listening
to this. And you're a teenager. There's like
educate your kids because like, I thought, okay, she's sad. 3 weeks max and then we'll be all right.
Yeah.
And it didn't stop. And that's what broke, like took the wind out of my sails.
Yeah.
And then I started to mimic her behaviour. I've always been a fussy eater, but like my eating problems now, I'm still having like problems with my eating. And like, if I'm not in a good routine, if I'm not happy enough, I just won't.
Because you learned it probably 14 is such a crucial age, isn't it?
So I started to mimic her behaviour. Sooner or later, I started to detest her, which is horrible because obviously she nothing you can do, but a bit of a catch 22. And then I moved out, went to go and live with my nan. But I was like so far gone. You know when you're so just folded into yourself now, like one move and this could all just go. And then obviously she tried to help, do the whole church thing. It just wasn't working. So then she kicked me out. But at that time, I just went on holiday with my mum and come back. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to work up and say, yeah, mum, I want to come back. Let's try this again. Then my nan kicked me out. That was like too quick, too soon. I didn't get a chance to say what I wanted to say. And then within a week, that relationship was gone again between my mum and I. Really? So it was like, nope, down to the council. You're out.
That was that. I've got lots to say, but I want to hear about your experience.
Yeah, so mine was a bit different. So what happened was me and mum were really, really close. Remember, like, we didn't have much money growing up and stuff. I was always like, I remember when I was like, literally, this sounds like a lie, this is genuine shit, like 7, 8, I would just go off on my own accord, like going to the estate, knocking on people's doors, like washing their cars for fiver just to give them money to a mum, like buying a microwave and stuff. So I was really like, that was like my role. So, not my role, but even when I was like 7, 8, like doing that, like selling sweets at school, getting money. And then got like a stepdad. He came in and we just like hated each other. Like he didn't want me in the house. I didn't want him in the house. It was that thing of my mum didn't have my back. And I was just like, okay. And that was like the only person I really care about. And I was like, cool, I'm gone. And then...
How old were you?
When like 16, 17. And then I got a train to London. And this is genuinely true as well. I swear this is true. So I got the train from Coventry to Marylebone. Yeah. And I just jumped over the barrier because I didn't have enough money for the train. And like Boris Johnson was there randomly. And I remember, nothing happened, obviously. I was just like, oh, you're that guy from Have I Got News For You, right? Because he was like, I didn't know he was he obviously must have just been mayor at that time or something. And I don't know where he's gone off to now. and then this is sleeping rough for like a while in
so
like
you literally got on a train and
didn't know anyone in London.
Where did you head to?
Wow. I basically used to stay there's a DLR station like Shadwell because it's like outside, you don't need to like
How well did you know London?
Nothing, I didn't know anyone like at all. And then
that's guts.
I mean,
but it was like that. I was like, obviously thinking back, I clearly had like probably like depression and stuff.
Yeah.
Like I just wasn't really, really unhappy. That's like, it was like a long time, it was about 3 weeks. And then obviously got to Centrepoint and I was really lucky because like, so this is like, 10 years ago now. Mm. There's universal credit now. Whereas before, when I was doing it, it was really like, I signed on and I got like housing benefit and I got a place in, I think it was Shadwell and stuff. So it was like, I managed to get my rent paid and I was getting like 70 quid, 80 quid, like just to kind of like live on. And that was, and then I started doing music, like Centrepoint got me in with the Roundhouse and stuff. So yeah, that's what happens.
I mean, it's pretty, like, even as you tell it, can you not believe it was you?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you've probably got things you like, be like, it seems like a different...
Yeah, and especially your teenage life, because it's just, you just don't know who you are, do you?
Yeah, and I think what it was like, I'd never told anyone about stuff like this. It gets a bit easier, but you're still like, oh, don't really want to talk about it.
Because
like,
you weren't really, really unhappy. It's not nice, is it, revisiting that door? So let's talk about when you arrived at Centrepoint. Do you both remember that day, that night?
Yeah. So I called my little brother and I was like, is Mum home? Because obviously she was at work now. Yeah. So when I went back to try and live with her, she started working again. We kind of started to recoup our relationship. Yeah. She was better and on the up and up. And I called her because obviously we'd kind of been like, again. Mm. Called my little brother and I was like, is Mum at home? And he was like, no. I rushed around there, packed all my stuff into like, I don't know, maybe about 15 black bags. I had a lot of stuff. Yeah. Packed all my stuff into like 15 black bags, called a cab and the guy was like, no, we're not allowed this in the cab. It's not a removal van.
Yeah,
I was like, please. I thought, no, you're going to kill me now because this is probably the last £10 I have until I don't know when. Please. The guy was so nice and in the end he ended up helping me, which it wasn't even far from my house. I was like, please, I'm only going around the road. I have no one else. And then got there, like unpacked all my stuff.
So you go in and someone meets you.
Yeah, so they greet me because I'd already done an assessment.
With your 15 black bags.
With my 15 black bags. Like, ooh,
it's quite an image.
This is a bag lady. They had already done my assessment, so I already knew which room I was going to. So
how had they done your assessment?
So you come in prior and they say, answer you a couple of questions, see if you'd be a right fit, see if this would be a right fit for you.
How did you know to even go for that assessment?
At my sixth form, there was like, something's wrong with her.
Really?
They picked it up. Then they allocated me a social worker. She came and done like this whole really intrusive assessment on my nan's house, which they proved there was nothing wrong with it. And it was a me thing. Then they gave me a placement.
But during those conversations with the social worker, what were you hoping? Did you know what you were hoping to get out of it?
I just need my own flat now. I need my own flat because I want to live alone and I want everyone to leave me alone. I like chronically wanted to be left alone. Like teachers would be like, you're right, Brooke Morgan. And I'd be like giving them the devil's eyes. Like, leave me alone. Like I literally just I just want to be in a box. I don't want to talk to no one. I just want to be left alone. I'm quite in control. So I feel like I'm quite mature for my age. And the fact that I didn't know what was going on was freaking me out. And everyone kept saying, well, what's wrong? Let us help you. What's wrong?
You felt like you needed to get some space.
I didn't even know. I said, my auntie came to me one time and she was all in tears and I was all in tears and she was like, Pud, what's wrong? And I was like, I don't know. And when I do know, I'll let everybody else know. But until then, everyone needs to leave me alone. So it was quite embarrassing for me as well. It felt quite humiliating for me to not know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think like around that time, it's like people weren't like that articulate about mental health.
No,
yeah. Like, I think back and I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't have any idea. Like if I said to my mum, like I was having a breakdown, she'd probably think, ring the AA.
It's come a long way in quite a short space of time, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
That national dialogue around mental health.
Yeah, and I think it's that thing of like, I think maybe as you grow older, you get the emotional tools to deal with stuff. But yeah, it's like having conversations about it. Like even now, like sometimes you might feel something and you go, oh, why do I feel this? And then you retract it back and it's usually like, I feel scared, I feel insecure. And it's like, I never would have thought that, especially like 17
years old. But having the ability to backtrack is what is really crucial. Because even now I have to be, I don't think I'm overly emotionally intelligent. Like I call my friends sometimes, I'm like, why do I feel like this? Like, what does this mean? Oh, you feel this, this means this. And I'm like, oh, okay.
The Centrepoint helpline is for any young people who are worried about homelessness. If you're aged between 16 and 25 and need help or know someone else who does, then call the helpline Monday to Friday on free phone 0808 800 0661 or visit the Centrepoint website for more support.
I always ask the good people of Instagram about the subject that I'm going to talk about, which is always very interesting and revealing. So I asked if any of them had ever been homeless, and 6% had. Don't really know what to do with that statistic. It's a lot of people, actually, out of my numbers. How old were you? And the majority of them were under 20 when they were homeless. And then there was another big peak at the end of their 30s, which I guess is when people have had kids. And then lots of people who had been homeless on more than one occasion. So I'd be interested to know the statistics. It's very hard to get statistics on this stuff. What led to it happening? Family home becoming overcrowded, teenage pregnancy, bad relationship with stepdad was a really common one. Family home being repurposed and escaping an abusive relationship. I asked people where they slept. Lots of people said they slept at friends' houses and that was a huge privilege. A few people at a hostel. Someone said on the number 19 bus, which goes from Finsbury Park. I'm looking at you because you might know it. Finsbury Park to Battersea, and they just did that on repeat. Yeah. In temporary accommodation, 3 people in 3 metres squared for 3.5 years. I slept in my car a lot, which is interesting when you say your car, but it's true. It's a space that is yours and you can get a... You can mobilise. Yeah. It's like pretty huge.
When I was a kid, I tried to sit on the bus, but they chuck you off at the end of the line.
Do they? Not if it's a night bus.
It just goes back.
Yeah, but then it goes up that line, then it changes over, doesn't it?
But this guy coming from Coventry is never going to know about the night bus routes, were you?
I know. Wow.
And yeah, overnight trains, a lot of people said that. But you get your tickets checked a lot, don't you?
Yeah, I know. What about the Circle line? I never tried that. Didn't that just go round and round?
But yeah, the tube used to shut, didn't it? But it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, on Fridays and Saturdays. So at least, I think it's weird because I think like the demographic of people that are, like, for example, using food banks, it's changing. Yeah. I think like when I was thinking back to when I was homeless, like, I was really lucky because I managed to sign on quite quickly. I remember within about a week. I remember being very surprised at how much money I was getting
before Universal Credit.
And like Universal Credit, you don't get your first payment for like 2 months, and then. It's like you got to go to all these meetings if you're 1 minute late, and then you got to ring up, and like the number's like 15p a minute.
It's like go on the internet, and loads of people don't have the internet.
Exactly. And you realise like actually what it is like is there's like this underclass of people like forming who basically just don't have a mum and dad to fall back on, or like you just don't have a support network. Because if you like, we know like so many people like you live in London. Something happens with your job, or you got a 0 hours contract, and then you're like, oh, I'm screwed. I need to go back to home, wherever that is. And then, but people just don't have that, and then you're screwed, and you can't even sign on.
That is why family is so much the crux of everything, isn't it?
Yeah,
I know. And obviously, that's just like luck, isn't it? Whether you've got
it
that.
It really is.
But also, I would really promote now, like having a found family. So, like found family is like people you pick and choose to be your support network, and like really make sure they understand how high you're ranking them. Thank God my relationship with my mum has come back bigger and better than ever because she now, even still, like, she's my, like, be-all and end-all now even. Yeah, I've got other family members, but my mum is like...
Yeah, I'm saying, I'm, like, super close with my mum now. Like, super, super close. But, yeah, you're lucky if you got that. You think you're, like, a group of mates, so you're proper, like...
Yeah.
But it's also interesting that you actually haven't moved that far from home. Like, you're still... living in the area that you grew up, but where you say, have you moved away hugely?
Yeah, like, I don't know any of my mates who went to school with Rui. Like, I don't know. I think it's like the same. Like I said, I'm a bit older. Things change, don't they? 28. Like people I know, like kind of getting married and having kids. Like both are back in Coventry.
Yeah, it begins to really.
Yeah, so like probably at that age, people like getting. So it's different, really. I think.
Yeah,
just kind of getting on with it.
Yeah.
I asked people how did being homeless make them feel, and they said lost, worthless, depressed, pointless, incapable of being the mother I needed to be, sad and cold and concerned about my parents. That's coming from someone who's as a family got made homeless, vulnerable and ashamed, scared, stressed and alone. I asked them where they went for support and help. No one at school or any of my friends knew what was happening, which is similar to what you're saying. We are on the council list and we've been on it for 2.5 years and still no end in sight. I went to locals in a pub who were lovely dodgy characters but who ended up becoming friends. I asked them how it had shaped them. I said, I care deeply about those from abusive homes. I don't trust anything or anyone and have serious anxiety. I'm determined to make my home open and welcoming. It shaped my career. I am a homeless support worker. I have a huge issue with wanting possessions.
That's weird.
I'm pointing at you with your 15 bags. I'm still going through it, so I'm not sure. I have terrible self-confidence issues. I'm very determined and driven to keep myself and my children with a roof over their heads. I make sure I'm always there for others. I said, any questions or comments? And a lot of people kept on asking me how they can help someone who's homeless. So I'll throw that out to you. What advice would you give?
Definitely, Centrepoint's got a helpline now. So definitely referring them to the Centrepoint helpline. I think a lot of people, what bugs me when I see like rough sleepers, because obviously there's different types of homelessness, just to how people ignore them. Now, I understand, I'm not really keen on the, don't know if this is a bit of a strong word, but the scams that come on the trains where there's like a group of people in rotation and they kind of know what they're doing. They've probably really got a bit of money but want a bit of extra money and aren't as bad off as they portray to seem. I've watched documentaries on that, so that isn't just me coming to my own conclusion. But yeah, just like people that seem like genuinely homeless, and I know that's a bit of a harsh like judgment to make in such a small amount of time that you just see them passing, like literally 3 seconds. But just if you haven't got money, just like there's nothing wrong with a smile and acknowledging them, because they're still human. There was this guy once, and I feel like this is a point where I really knew I had really matured and grown a lot, and I called my mum after and I was so proud of myself. But like this guy came up to me, black guy, his body language was really small and like shut off, and he was looking at the ground and he was like, I'm sorry I have to embarrass myself and ask anyone for help, and I'm sorry I have to disrupt your journey today, but I'm struggling and I'm just so hungry. And I thought, do you know what, that's different, because I haven't heard anyone want food like that. Like normally they're trying to feed a habit opposed to, do you know what I mean? And I didn't have any, I end up giving him like £2 or something. But I was like, I just wanted to talk to him. He absolutely smelled, because obviously he hadn't washed and he looked really physically dirty. But I shook his hand. I literally spoke to him and he was like, he was giving some girl money to pay rent and then she wasn't paying it. So they both got kicked out. She's now been able to go and off and sleep with someone else, but he's a man and it's a bit more harder. So I took his email address and I gave him mine, and I was, he apparently used to be a leisure centre manager, and I was like, I always get those jobs in my inbox, like give me your CV and I'll help you do it up, or give me your email and we'll get you another job, because I always see those. And he was like in tears, and then I was like, I didn't want to give him a hug because I felt like that was a bit too much for me personally, but like I shook his hand, I gave him £2, I'm sure I had like a brioche in my back, gave it to him, and it was just like
a brioche.
Like keep going, brother, because like we all must just help each other, like we all get down and out. He never did email me, but I do hope he's well.
You in think my of heart him.
Yeah, I do, because that was, for me, I really struggled with vulnerability. I felt like I saw some of myself in him, like
it's really
that was hard
for him to be having to say those words
as a man as well, with all that like toxic masculinity and mask and everything that they parade and in order to protect themselves. So I was like, oh, my heart, man.
The first question that everyone asks is like, well, there's no need for people to be homeless, no need for people to be sleeping rough, like because you've got all this, you've got all that, you went to Centrepoint. It's like, just before, for argument's sake, let's just say you're right. I mean, the fact that someone is in a mental state where they would rather sleep rough. And that's the thing. Like, people are in that state where they don't want help and they don't want to be part of society. That's why they're there. It's not anything really to do with it. Like, it's the fact, it's like a... now it is different, because now I think it is like really hard to get money, like, and public funds are being cut. Like, it is really hard. But at that time, it was like, no, the fact that people are in a mental state where they don't want...
You're opting out.
Yeah, basically. You're opting out of society. And like, you'd rather, like, yeah, you might as well do drugs. Like, if you've got all this like trauma, like all this stuff that you're carrying around inside, it was like mental health issues. It's like, yeah, why would you?
Reality is too hard.
Yeah.
And it's like, why, just, you might as well become a drug, like, at least you get something out of it. That's why they're thinking. And it's like...
no other option.
Exactly. And then obviously you get... like, kind of, you obviously get hooked on that and stuff, and you fall in with that crowd. But yeah, it's like you become a climber, so you don't, like, people don't intend to be druggies, but it's like one bit at a time, incrementally. And then suddenly you find yourself like, how the hell did I get here and stuff. Centrepoint are really great. Like, they're like amazing for me. Because also, like, they weren't really, I found, like, for me, they weren't like patronizing. Like, so I was like, I want to be in a band. And they're like, we'll hook you at the Roundhouse. And then the Roundhouse were amazing. So they got us like a rehearsal space. They gave us all guitars. And it was only £1 an hour we had to give them.
Yeah.
So we stayed there like 9 hours a day. And that's how we did that band. Like,
and it's still that price. Just really?
Is it still that price now?
But you've got the double whammy. You're learning a skill. And also you've got an outlet for when your head is a mess, right? Go and play some music. Yeah. It's therapy.
And have a go on the computer. Like, they had like Macs and stuff with like really good like software, and you can like learn that, and they just let you have it. And I remember being like, fucking hell, this is amazing. Like, I couldn't believe it. And
so that is the thing, from speaking to you before this, that the amount of things you can get from Centrepoint, of course it's food and somewhere to sleep, and but it is way beyond that, isn't it?
Yeah, so like I said, with my time at Centrepoint, I was only there for about, I mean, like I said, it's like 10 years ago. I wasn't there for that long, but they hooked me up with a place to stay.
So it's a much bigger journey beyond where to rest your head.
I suppose now it's obviously different, because they can't just like give you another flat, because you're not going to be able to find it that quickly. But it was like within a week and a half, I think.
Oh, wow.
That's why I look back and I'm like, I'm so lucky now, because now it's nothing.
I think it was maybe like 3 weeks.
Right.
But then when I actually got a job, because I started working at Warner on a major film, which was really cool, and I was getting the Dash show, like, I was paying my full rent, I was like really chuffed about it, saving. And then when obviously that contract finished, because films end, I had to switch back onto like welfare benefits, and then they was doing the universal credit switchover. Then I had to stop my job seekers and go into universal credit, which means then I had to wait for 9 weeks. Right. And I literally went there crying, like, I have no food.
Yeah.
Like, I have nothing.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, sorry, well, you could get an advance. Okay, well, when I get my money and have to pay back my advance, I'm not going to be able to afford food. It's a death circle is what universal credit is.
Yeah, if you're ever like late to a meeting or whatever, you like, they'll get cancelled.
Ridiculous.
It's not human, is it?
Yeah, not.
The other thing, when I was asking people on Instagram, is overwhelmingly I had stories from people flagging the fact that no one expects to become homeless. You might at one point in your life think you're so safely away from that, but life can change. Life can throw you curveballs, can't it?
Like one and a half paycheck away from being homeless, everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Living in London.
Someone's message about their dad, who he'd had, his wife had left him, and then he'd had a breakdown and he'd become suicidal, and suddenly, he's living on their sofa. Or a teacher in a school in East London and saying again that you wouldn't believe the number of kids that are affected by this.
Yeah, and it's, you're right. I think, like, also now, I think the problems are like, even like gambling and stuff. Like, people have those apps and like, they get drunk and they bet like all their money away, and they're like, now you're homeless. It's like, like crazy story.
And I think the uncomfortable thing about all of this is it's so linked to so many other subjects, in fact, that I've covered on this podcast, but health, mental health, universal credit, divorce. I've done an episode about estrangement. This is just, homelessness feels like a real visual representation of where things are going wrong in so many other issues. In conclusion, although we've covered quite a lot of stuff, what advice would you give yourself at the brink of when things were really difficult for you? And what do you think you've learnt from it that you take forward into day-to-day life?
I like this one. Now, these two quotes now that I'm like really passing on.
because last June I founded a community interest company, SheOath, which is about instilling authentic confidence into vulnerable young women. And what I'm saying to a lot of those women that approach us and are having a hard time is it can't rain forever.
Mm.
And you've passed all of your bad days, that like you've gotten over all of your bad days. So that's just a testament to strength. So why stop now? Mm. And if you're in hell, why would you want to stay there?
Keep going.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
So those kind of three things, I've always been had quite a lot of mental resilience and been quite mentally strong. But even for the best of us, like the strongest of us, mental health doesn't discriminate. Yeah. I think that's the only thing.
I know it's a problem when mental health kind of lies up badly with anxiety. And when it does come down badly, you can't imagine a time of ever feeling normal again.
Yeah.
But you just have to know that you will. You always do.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Exactly. So, yeah. And I think... well, with the company I founded, like, I feel like that's been my biggest lesson. A lot of my peers were like making really bad decisions, but like we discussed, they may have not had mums at home that was instilling that, like I say, I've been groomed with goodness. Like my mum was like instilling those gems in me.
I hope my kids say this about me one day.
Yeah, into my foundations. Yeah. So where I was able to extract and use the things in my lowest of low times, I had to be careful that I didn't become ego driven, and that is the like kind of premise of why I founded the company as well. And then we do like one-off workshops that are just open to everyone, all types of women, regardless if you're a vulnerable young woman or just want to come and find something to do.
Got a very old head on young shoulders, haven't you? I'm like, how are you doing this?
Groomed with goodness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
same questions to you.
I think when I was like, especially when I was that age, I think I was just like lost, really. And I think, similar to what you were saying, I think people need to like kind of understand what their why is. Like, so when people do goals, they're like, what do I do? How am I going to do it? Like all that. But it's like, oh, well, why are you doing it? Or like, what do you actually want? And I think once you find out like what you actually want, and I knew, then I realised like, oh, like similar to said at the start of the show, it's like, what do you want out of life? And I think I just want to create a body of work that I'm really proud of. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of gives you that bit of like glimmer of hope. And you're like, I want to do that. And then you realise you need to do that. And then you realise that you actually can do that. Well, mm-hmm. that's why I think stuff like Centre Point is really important. I think that's why like mentorships are really, really important. Mm-hmm. Charities, like arts charities especially, that should do like a much better job of what they intend to sort of do. And kind of that is instilling that thing of like people going, oh, you are good. You, like, you can do it.
So before we finish up, where can people find you? And is there anything you want to shout about?
I'll be doing loads of workshops. Well, SheOath, SheOath on Instagram and Twitter. SheOath UK, I think we are on Twitter.
Yeah, it always has to be slightly different.
Just go on Instagram, type in SheOath and follow us. But yeah, definitely... authentic confidence, because I feel like it's scientifically been proving that confidence improves everyone's quality of life across the board.
And you're Brooke Morgan.
A Brooke Morgan LDN.
LDN. You can't leave London.
It's
only handle.
So what I'm doing my second Edinburgh show with Sophie Theatre again. So that'll be in Edinburgh this next year. Wow, in August.
Yeah, that's going to come around now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'll be doing like a week, and then we're going to Mumbai in India with Sophie Theatre to do the show there.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then like LA, New York, hopefully as well.
Do you need any assistance on that?
Yeah,
we'll
get on board, man.
And who are you on Instagram?
It's Kai Samras, KaiSamra.
And then I always ask my audience to complete the sentence, I'll be honest, I. So some of their answers are... I'll be honest, I am so happy to have just taken my bra off. Hate the theatre, any type of theatre, but particularly musical theatre. Need to cut my pubes. Really miss eating dairy. I'm vegan. That made me chuckle. Wish I was able to fall in love. Don't enjoy sex and don't like celery. Nobody loves celery, though, do they?
Yeah, what a thing to say.
Like, celery's just like, okay at best, isn't it? I mean,
who enjoys celery?
I would not be bothered if I never ate celery again.
Celery is inedible at best.
Yeah, but there's all those trends for celery juice, aren't
there? No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not into it. I'll do mine and then I'll ask you mine.
Okay.
I'll be honest, my nearly two-year-old daughter was watching Lion King this morning and pointed at Pumbaa and said, look, it's mummy. And I just didn't know what to do with that information. I was like, yeah. Anyhow, I haven't got over it. of all the characters, no one wants to be blooming Pumbaa, do they?
Yeah, someone said I look like Scar Pumbaa the other day. I was like, that's...
It's the little hair that comes into a
Scar's
V.
Scar's good. Really? I mean, it's not good because it's bad, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but... talk about... why is he darker than the rest of it? You know what I mean?
No, I'm joking. Like, I absolutely
Mufasa's
love Lion King.
Like, Mufasa's mum's got a lot of questions to ask about their own.
Don't do this about Lion King.
No, I love Lion King.
What are your... I'll be honest,
I need to finish the treatment for my first directed piece I'll be doing this year, because I've been...
sitting on it.
Slacking it off, yeah.
Give yourself a deadline. I'm going to hound you now.
Yeah.
You'll be honest, you...
I'll be honest, I need a new haircut.
You said this at the beginning.
I know. I've had the same haircut since like
day of birth. Go and do it then. I mean, I don't feel that strongly that you do, but why don't you? Because I feel like it could be a new chapter.
Get Kane Rose.
Yeah, shall I? That's good. Definitely good. I've got you making me do the accent, do the cornrows.
Go to Jamaica, they'll sort you out.
I've been Clemmie Telford, and these wonderful two have been Kai and Britt Morgan, and this has been Honestly. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates all about it. Thank you for listening to another episode of Honestly. If you found this week's episode interesting, which I hope you did, I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do give me a rating or review, and even better, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each week's episode delivered straight to you.